Hello.
How you doing?
Good, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad. A bit hot.
Long time no speak.
Yeah, very long time. almost a month, I think. Lots of different things going on. And yeah, now everyone's melting. Come back from holiday and it's roasting hot.
It's horrible. It keeps getting worse as well. It's just getting worse and worse and worse.
Yeah, my garden is... I mean, we got a football goal. Leah got a football... My oldest got a football goal for Christmas. Which is quite, a kid-sized football goal, still quite big, and he sort of wrecked basically the garden running around, and I sort of reseeded it and managed to get all the grass back. And just as the summer started, the grass was looking fantastic, and now it's all dead and sandy coloured. It's horrific.
Yeah, mine's just yellow everywhere. It's absolutely horrible.
It seems to be like that everywhere. So I thought it was just me, because we got some issue with our garden historically, where there's some concrete underneath it somehow, because the people were idiots. And we think the sun was, burning through the grass, making the concrete hot, and that was killing it faster. But I think it's just too damn hot,
Just horrible.
But luckily, what I thought was the best investment in my office when I built it, which was the underfloor heating, is second now to the air conditioning, which is amazing because I can leave it on all the time, and it just turns off automatically. So it goes to sleep mode if no one's here, if there's no movement. But it keeps a sort of low eco mode. So you just walk in the morning.
Oh, that is nice.
Really nice, and it's not like a freezer, it's not like a fridge, but you can tell the difference. You walk in, it's just lovely.
I need to get something like that. I've got a space above my window. I reckon I could probably get like a one put in, maybe.
Yeah, it depends what you do. I mean, I went with, originally I had a portable one, which is one of these sort of 10,000 BTU things, which is...
Yeah, I've got one of those in my bedroom, which is a lifesaver at the moment.
And they're brilliant. It's as noisy as it was, because it would start up. With these things, you start them up and you think, oh, that's quite a reasonable sound. It's not bad.
Yes. Take a little bam! And then the compressor kicks in.
That's the freeloader working. And all of a sudden it kicks in. And it's like, oh, okay, that's
we've got one in our bedroom, and we just I shut the curtains all day. And then about 2 hours before I go to bed, I whack that on with all the doors closed. And it gets it down to about 19 degrees. And then by the time you've turned it off and got into bed, it's like, oh, it's nice and cold. But the problem is if you wake up in the middle of the night and it's really hot, and then it's like, oh, I need to put it back on, but it's going to be so noisy.
Yeah. No, I went with, so I had that for a year, for one summer, and then I figured it was taking up too much space and it was too noisy, so I looked into doing a wall-mounted thing. So the following year, I got a Daikin thing fitted. It's about 3 years ago now, 2-3 years ago. So they fit a big condenser thing on the outside, pipe it through, and it's in the corner of the room, and it's got this sort of 3D motion, so it's sort of, the fan sort of goes up and down, but can also go left and right, so it can move the air everywhere. And it also does heating, which is quite nice if you want to just sort of warm the room up in the winter without putting the underfloor heating on, which takes a bit longer to sort of get going. But it's amazing.
I always say to people, I'd much rather it be freezing cold than boiling hot. Because if it's cold, it's really easy to warm up. You can just put on a jumper, you can stick on a heater. It's not difficult to stay warm when it's cold. But when it's hot, it is an absolute nightmare trying to get cold. It's
exactly.
Difficult cooling stuff.
Exactly. And we go camping as well, and it's even, in the trailer tent that we've got, it's like vinyl type service, and you've got to, I've got to take the Dyson. I end up taking the Dyson fan and pointing it out the window, so it's actually trying to blow the air out because the air inside is so warm. But that can be a bit of a nightmare too. So I'd much rather be cold, especially in camping.
It's horrible.
What else have you been doing?
Nothing really. No. I did. I went for a week in Cornwall, but it was to go to my brother's wedding. It wasn't. I suppose we did have a holiday. We did a few holiday touristy things, went to the Eden Project and St. Michael's Mount, a few bits like that. It was nice.
The Eden Project's the one with all the domes that they use on sci-fi films.
Yeah, they used it in, which Bond film was it? Die Another Day, they used it. To be honest, it wasn't actually that as good as I'd hoped. It was, the domes were nice, but there was a huge party of French kids there, like a busload had come in. Doing like school trips and stuff, and so there's just French kids running around screaming everywhere. It's like, ugh. it was busy and it was hot, and it was just like, ugh.
School kids running around and teachers looking drawn faces, wanting a drink because they're trying to cope with not losing children.
Yeah.
I always see those when you see them in town or whatever. It's like, that is a job I could not have. I do not want to be responsible for other people's children.
Oh, God. No, it was unpleasant. And just like, food wasn't great and stuff like that. It was all right, but it was incredibly expensive, and it was a long way away from where we were staying. So it was like a long day out that wasn't as good as I'd hoped it'd be. But then one day we went to St. Michael's Mount, which is like, it's basically like an island that is, well, it's only an island half of the time because it's that far enough away that when the tide is out, you can walk to it along a little causeway. But when the tide comes in, it becomes an island. So it's like, must be half a mile off the coast, if that, quarter of a mile,
I've
something like
heard
that.
of
It's like
that, yeah.
no distance, but it's a huge, like, island. It's just like a little mound. And on the top of it, there's a castle that this family lives in that the National Trust sort of like let people go around. These beautiful gardens all the way around it, and then like a little tiny village where the people that work in the castle live. And it's still like used as a proper castle. Like I said to them, you must have some good Christmas parties here. And he's like, oh yeah, the lord that lives here, like he'll just use that dining room sometimes. They'll take the ropes away and they'll sit in there when everyone's gone. And
That's like, where did I go to? What's the Downton Abbey, the real name of Downton Abbey?
oh yeah, I know the place.
Highclere Castle. So if you go to Highclere Castle, I had to go there. I think I went there. There was an inquiry about an app. They wanted like some interactive guide app that you could sort of click on and navigate around rooms and find info. And that's weird because I don't watch Downton Abbey, but I've seen clips of it and stuff. And they've got areas of, and it's a, they live in the house, but they've set up the whole thing as obviously a touristy thing. So they've got those little red corded things, cording off rooms and cording off places. But it's just bizarre to think that, they're a family, they've got loads of kids, and they sort of live in one part of the house because this thing is just enormous. I mean, you would lose your children for months, or yourself. And it's just funny, yeah. It's exactly like that. It's just funny that you could think, should we go and should we just go in the drawing room today and have a coffee in there and have a tea in there or something? And it's like, where they normally film stuff. It's amazing.
The weirdest thing is that they were saying that it's the worst school run in the world, because like the head butler that lives there, he's got kids, and he says that it takes half an hour to get down the hill, then they have to get a boat over, and then gets his car and drives the kid to school and drops it off, and it takes like basically an hour and a half there and back. And he's doing
Yeah,
it twice a
stuff
day
up.
every day. And the tour guide was like, "Oh yeah, you might see the Lord's moody son. He's 14 years old, and he really hates the fact he has to keep walking up and down this hill because it's up a really steep hill as well. This castle. It's
And
a strange
isn't there
place."
stories about isn't there stories about people getting stranded because they get the timing wrong? Of
Well,
going back and forth or whatever, or driving. Can you drive across and they get stuck because the tide comes in or something?
You
I've heard
can,
stories.
well, I mean, you could drive a car across, but you wouldn't be allowed to.
Right.
They do to get like deliveries and stuff in. But what happens is, we timed it perfectly. We arrived, walked over when it was like the sea was right out, really nice. And then they have like a little clock that says, like, okay, the tide's coming in, so the causeway will be shut from 2:30. And if you're not off by 2:30, then you have to get the boat back, and they basically just charge £2 for the boat. But they just have like little boats that just keep going back all the time. So it's, I think if you were stuck there, they would just take you back, unless the weather was really, really bad. But they said at one point there was a baby was born there, but the sea was too rough to get the midwife out there, so they had to just. She's like, oh, if you see one of the, I forget which fisherman it was. It's like, if you're on his boat, he's the one that delivered it.
Wow.
And apparently, all the men on the island are trained as firefighters, because if there's ever a fire, it obviously takes a while to get the proper fire crew over in a lifeboat. So they all have to be trained in order to contain the fire, if not actually fight it properly. I was like,
Sure.
yeah, that would put me off actually living here.
So people, so it's a big island. People, there's quite a few places that
I think there's
live
like 30 people live there, I think. It's not huge. It's only
there. Oh,
small.
wow.
But and all the people that live there work there, so I think
That's
that's
pretty
part of
cool.
it. Yeah, it was really interesting. So that was a really good day out, just because it didn't really cost much, and it was much, much, much nicer than I expected. And it was a nice day, and lots to see and do, interesting stuff. So yeah, it was a
So
good holiday.
did you drive down in the Land Rover?
I did, which was, oh my God. So I obviously live in Leicester, and the place we were staying at is on the Lizard, which is basically the most southerly point of the UK. If you look at
What
Cornwall,
helps
it's
drive?
that bit that drops down the bottom. Yeah, it was 6 hours.
Ooh.
So that was fun. And the journey back was 8 hours because a caravan
Ah.
had overturned on the road back. And then because we were like that far down in Cornwall, everywhere we wanted to go was like an hour's drive away. People sort of forget that Cornwall has no motorways. Like as soon as you get to Exeter down the M5, that's it. That's the end of
Yeah.
major roads. And so, I mean, it was probably like 2 hours to get to Bristol, 2 hours, well, 2 hours to get to Bristol, an hour and a half to get to Exeter, and then the smallest part of the journey to Cornwall took 2.5 hours. It was the longest bit. Just because you're going down little A roads and back streets and stuff. It was good, but the Land Rover was good. It was comfy. I'm missing CarPlay slightly. I did love having CarPlay in my... I had a Fiat 500L, but I installed it in myself. But the thing I was expecting... I was really expecting the map software to be shit. Because it's one of these things that comes on a little SD card. And it's like, well, how often is this going to get updated? It's not going to know where places are. It's going to have crappy animations and be slow and juddery and all of that stuff. But actually, it's been really, really good. And one of the best things about it is that in the central console, like behind the steering wheel, like between where the speedometer is and the rev count and all that stuff, it actually has like a little display. And when you've got turn-by-turn instructions on, it pops up the next instruction there when you're like a mile away. So you'll be driving up to a roundabout, and then just in front of you, behind the steering wheel, it'll say like, show a little roundabout symbol, and then say 2 in the middle, so you need to get exit 2. So that's been really good, because quite often I miss stuff on CarPlay, because I always have the audio turned off, because I hate having it being like, turn left in 200 yards. It pisses me off. So actually, it's turned out to be a lot better in several ways. Obviously, I have to do stuff with like Bluetooth audio, but that's not so bad. The worst thing is that because it's over Bluetooth, when you do Siri, as soon as you invoke it, it's activating that weird Bluetooth mode where it's using it as a speaker and a microphone. So then the quality drops to like, you know, 2 tin cans and a string. Just drops down to that, and it's really quiet. And so I'll sort of say, hey, thingamabob. And I go, beep, beep. And then I'll be like, play, blah, blah, blah. And you can just hear a sort of like grainy voice. And you're never quite sure if it's worked. And then the right song kicks in. You're like, okay, that kind of worked. But it's, I used to have just a physical Siri button. Like, I press it and it would activate it, and I'd say what I wanted and it'd be done. So that's one thing I miss. But yeah, it was good. It was good. Nice drive. Cool. Comfortable vehicle.
Yeah, with Siri, it's like I get frustrated sometimes with the whole timing of the beep beep thing. You know, it just seems to vary with different things. It's like, you know, when it's actually ready to understand you. So you don't get that sort of... I know that we'll talk about WWDC and the Watch 5 stuff that's happened, where you don't have to say, hey, dingus anymore. You can just lift your wrist. And it feels like, you know, the lady in a tube is much better at things like that, because you could just sort of just say the name and then just go into it. So you just say, you know, dingus, what's the weather like today? You don't have to pause. But with Siri, I always feel like it's this, you know, hey dingus on my watch, or hey dingus on my phone, or whatever. And I'm not sure whether I should just naturally say what I want and it's going to pick it up after the beep anyway, or whether I have to wait for the beep definitely. And it's just really inconsistent experience. One thing I hate about Siri.
Yeah, I've got used to now just saying hey thingamabob and then just immediately talking at what I want, because I know it's always listening. And I think it's true that the microphone's pretty much always like, because they have to be in order to listen for the command, but they're just not storing it. It's like it's, the microphone is open, but it's not storing that data. But it probably keeps it in memory for a couple of seconds. And I reckon that as soon as you say the keyword, hey, thingy, then even if it hasn't recognized it yet, as soon as it does, it might have been a second's past and you've still been talking, but it can go back and fetch that bit of audio. Because it always seems to work absolutely flawlessly for me if I do it with like the HomePod. Like my wife will constantly have a long pause and wait for the beep beep, which sometimes she doesn't hear, or
all kinds I haven't obviously been confident enough to just say it,
rattle it off it goes.
I'll say the hey dingus and then I haven't heard a beep, so I'll wait, and then obviously it must have some throwaway thing there where it's like, okay, I need to now listen, or I'll say, you know, hey dingus, and start to speak, and then I haven't heard the beep, so I'll stop, and it must go, oh, okay, I'm going to discard that, it makes no sense, and then it will wait. So it becomes this sort of confused conversation thing you're having with someone where, you know, when you interrupt each other and you keep, you go.
It's like, one of the problems with Siri, really, is that it requires a bit of learning as to how to use it, which people don't. Like, if you forget everything you've ever done with it and just go, hey thingy, blah, 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 and immediately say what you want to do, even if you do it really quickly, like I'll be like, hey thingy, play Careless Whisper by George Michael, and it'll just go, bing. Now playing, and then it'll click in straight away, and it will completely change how you use Siri. It just makes it so much more efficient and makes it seem way better than it is.
Yeah, I mean, I just, while I was on mute, then I just tried saying it, but I was holding my watch up. But actually, the HomePod picked it up.
Oh, the watch is
The HomePod picked it up. So that starts telling me what the weather's like. My headphones are on, and so I'm, you know, obviously got a muffled sound. And I'm literally like going, "Hey, Dinger, shut up, shut up."
That's the problem with the HomePod, is that it takes over everything if it's even mildly in earshot. Like, they say that it's supposed to intelligently go to the device that's best to cater for it, but it's always the HomePod, because the HomePod's got the best mics. So yes, if I'm sat in my office, my HomePod that's in my kitchen, which is about two or three rooms away, if my office door is open and I say it to my phone, the HomePod in the office will pick it up, and it's like, what? How? How has it even heard that? If I said that, my wife wouldn't hear me. In there.
And if you've got the stereo pair, because I've got stereo pair now in the office, then both mics are on, even though only one of them responds to you.
So
wherever you are, so you've got even doubled power. But the Alexa, shouldn't say it. But the Echo's interesting, because it also does the sort of communication between them to work out, you know, I'm going to take this one. But our house, it screws up in the evenings, because I have the Circle, the Disney Circle, which does all the kids control. And so their devices, their Echo shows go off at sort of 7:30, you know, bedtime time. So you get this confusion, because I'll be sitting in Rosie's room and I want to play some music for her, you know, to go to bed with. And the Echo's like 5 feet away from me. But where I'm sitting, I'm within earshot of the one in Leo's room. And because that's not connected, it can't do, it obviously doesn't work locally because it, well, I guess because the Circle just cuts it off completely. So it wouldn't even work on the Wi-Fi. But it can't do that communication. So you end up going, you know, Echo, play some lullaby music, and the one that's connected in Rosie's room will start going because it heard you, and then you'll hear Leo's one go, "I'm sorry, I can't help you right now," sort of thing. And it's like, because it's not connected, it can't say, "I'll take it." So there's just this weird confusion with these other devices going, "No, I can't help, sorry." Sort of screws it all up. But yeah, it's very clever.
Well, speaking of WWDC, shall we crack on with that stuff?
What do you want to talk about? iOS 12?
Yeah, why not? Why not?
I haven't even got any notes on what was actually discussed, but I've sort of got
the only two things I remember about iOS 12 were the Siri shortcuts thing, which is super interesting. Yeah. And the other thing was the Memoji. They're the only two things I recall.
The one I've just recalled was this performance thing, because it was quite a big deal at the first.
Oh, of course.
In the first section. Now, I've installed it on an iPhone 7, so of course can't do any emoji stuff, but it seems, you know, I think I put beta 3 on last night because it came out with beta 3. And it seems quite fast and quite slick and everything, but it's quite interesting that, yeah, they focused a lot on performance, tended to be for the older devices, so 5Ss, 6s. I don't think it runs on a 5, so 5Ss onwards. You know, something like doubling the speed of opening apps, improvements under load. And I guess all this links back to a lot of the issues around the battery stuff as well. You know, checking the, you can obviously now check the quality of batteries in iOS 11. I think my 7s actually, which is interesting, it's about 3 years old, it was at about 94% or something efficiency, which probably isn't that bad. But yeah, looks like massive performance improvements. I'm not sure what that's going to do. You know, you'd hope that if you install it on an iPhone 10, it's going to be even slicker, but maybe it's just so fast anyway, it's hardly noticeable.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. I would like them to have done the same sort of thing with Mojave, but I haven't installed that yet.
No, I've not installed that.
Well, and the main reason I haven't is I kept asking a few people, but the people I'm asking to go, "Oh, yeah, it's fine. But they tend to be people that are just doing test apps and not publishing stuff. You know, they're like, dev evangelist type roles or technical engineers, so they're developing test scripts and things, but they're never publishing stuff. And I know that there's this issue that you have to hack the IPA or archive file to change the build machine, build machine to be able to upload it, because Apple don't like that. But it seems crazy, because once they've done a public beta, I feel like they should allow it, because if you're not using Xcode beta, if you're using the normal Xcode, you know, the public release of Xcode, but you happen to be using the beta of macOS, I don't really see the issue with just allowing you to upload. You know, it's one number. With all these things, it always frustrates me, because if it's so easily hackable and changeable, it might as well just allow it. You know, it's just annoying. And that's the only reason I haven't put it on. But I was contemplating beta 3 on the iPhone 10, but it's that whole thing of, you know, there'll be that one app that one single app that you want to use.
I mean, Skype, nearly always never, like, the banking apps, I find.
Yes. Yeah, well, I tested those, so I installed a couple of those on. That's what I've been doing, basically. So I think I'm probably pretty safe to install it now. Beta 3 is usually, beta 1 was apparently very good. Beta 3 is apparently pretty good. But I think what I'll do is any critical apps I'm using currently, I'll stick on 7, just make sure they work before I go for it. But yeah, I would like to try it out.
See, I don't have anything critical, but I still have that nervousness about doing it. Because it's more irritating. It's usually the banking apps that piss me off, because if suddenly I can't access my bank account, it doesn't matter. Exactly. I can do it on the computer. It's not a problem. It's more irritation that I can do without. But I really do want to try out the Memoji. So I'm like...
And what was it? Tongue detection. Yeah, the big feature that got a massive great slide. But yeah, I mean, I did have one, you know, normally don't have problems with betas, but I did have that one incident last year where I'd got to like beta 5 or beta 6 of High Sierra, and I finally put it on my main machine. I wasn't really doing any publishing of apps at that point, so it wasn't really a big problem. I was just working on stuff still. But I had that weird issue with iCloud where basically the syncing stopped. So, you know, notes wouldn't sync. I noticed it because I was using that Bear app, and my notes weren't syncing between my phone, which I don't think was running the beta, and I was running the beta on Mac OS. And it ended up being a call with Apple, and they actually, you know, got on a call with me. And iCloud, if you logged in at iCloud.com, everything was screwed up. It was showing no backups. It was showing disk space was all wrong. Everything was just screwed. And they eventually worked out it was some inconsistency with using, you know, a beta on one device and not on another device and whatever. And it was a Friday evening. Saturday morning, it was fixed, and everything started syncing again. It was really bizarre. So that's the only thing as well. But it was fixed, so yeah, I'm sure it'll be fine.
I am talking about the performance stuff. I had a little play with ARKit 2 on my iPhone 6S, it must have been, because I was really excited by the fact that you can now attach objects to other real-world objects. So you can basically tell Xcode, hey, this is an object, either by giving it a 2D image so it recognizes it, like a QR code type thing almost, or a 3D model. Or you can even do a thing where you can take your iPhone camera. So if I had this can of cocoa in front of me, I could scan it with the phone camera and then load that in, and then suddenly that's available as a 3D object that I can attach stuff to. And it works phenomenally well. I could not believe how well it worked with the iPhone 6S, which is obviously old hardware now. But I built a very, very simple test app where I took a Magic the Gathering playing card and I put it into Xcode, and then I could just attach data to the side of it, and like you could pick up the card and wiggle it, and like the data was literally just stuck to the side of it. Like even when I was like wobbling the card left and right, you can actually see it like flickering the text absolutely perfectly in sync, and I was like moving the camera around all over the place trying to get it to desynchronize with it, and it wasn't. It's just completely stuck on, the digital and the physical together. It's crazy advanced. Really, really impressive. And that's on old hardware, which is presumably, when we finally get AR glasses, they're not going to be using, you know, the iPhone X technology in them, because the chip will be too big. They'll be using probably an iPhone 6S chip or an iPhone 7 chip that's been shrunk down a bit with modernization. So it's really, really cool to see that. But more interestingly was how I managed to load all the information in. So you can literally give it a photograph. So I downloaded a picture of the particular card that I wanted to use from the Magic website, and it was a PNG. It was something like 330 pixels by 200, so it's not high res by any stretch of the imagination. And I downloaded about 5 of them. You just stick them into Xcode like you're doing image assets. You just put it in, and then all you have to do is tell it what the physical size of it is in the real world. So I was like, okay, well, that is 0.61 centimeters tall. And then it knew automatically the width based on the aspect ratio. And it gave me a warning. It said these should really be more than 480 pixels, because otherwise it's more tricky. It's like, okay, well, we'll try. And then literally, I put my phone over the top of it and it instantly recognized the real-life version. So it's not a printout of that card. It's like an actual card that I bought in a shop somewhere. But just from that little tiny shitty PNG, it could recognize it and distinguish it was different to the other ones that look slightly similar. So really, really good stuff, A, on the machine learning side, that it was able to do the predictions between them, but also crazy how easy it was just to drop it in and go, okay, this is a thing I want to use, and have it just work immediately. So that's really impressive. It's a shame it doesn't scale up. You can only have 25 things. Well, you can have more, but they say it stops working over 25, and when I tried it with 280 different cards, it did stop working reliably. But it works very, very well with small things. It's very, very clever technology. Very clever.
What, 25, 25 things on a table, or 25 things total learnable?
25 learnable things. So the example. Okay. So basically, you put them in this. I forget what they call it. It's not an XE asset bundle.
Is that just a temporary thing, or is that a long term? Is that the limit? Or?
Well, I imagine it must be a more longer term thing. It says about 25. It's not a hard limit.
Right.
And it just says that basically performance degrades beyond that. It finds it much harder to learn between the things.
Which is
fair enough. But what you can do, so the example they give in the documentation is of a museum. So maybe you go around and you want to hold your phone up, and when it recognizes the artwork, it'll put like an overlay on top of it or all that kind of stuff. And so they said, using something like core location, all you need to do is work out where they are in the museum, and then load up a different one of these bundles into memory. You can have one at a time. So maybe if you're in the Egyptian wing, you have those 30 paintings, and then as soon as you move into a different one, you can use Bluetooth to go, okay, now you should be using this particular one. So there are ways around it. It doesn't work for the app that I had in mind, but it's still crazy that it worked with low-res PNGs and was able to recognize it and modify. So I could say, add a 50% red overlay to this card, and it would overlay it physically over the top, so that the card literally just changed color. So weird.
So could you use...
Exciting.
I guess you could also use the camera, or whether it's AR kit or just barcoding, like QR codes. I know people don't like QR codes, but you could almost use that as well, because as you're entering a room, you can scan the barcode that can potentially, or scan something that could potentially be recognized to say, oh, right, you're moving into another area, and then reload the bundles of things. So that's pretty cool. Yeah. I mean, the AR, it's interesting with AR kit, because... I mean, clearly something is going to happen with some sort of wearable, and they're doing a very clever move to basically create the whole ecosystem of apps ready for that device.
Yeah. So that Lego demo at WWDC, it went on a bit too long, but it was incredible.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing where they had... at one point, there were people that weren't sure which part of that was real. They thought the whole thing was just an AR kit demo, because they might have tuned into it late. You know, they didn't realize there was a model there, and that everything else was. And then the best bit was when they took the front of the model off. Let's take the front wall away, and then suddenly they're looking inside rooms that are all obviously digital, and there's characters in there, and guy getting out of the bath and his towel's falling off and stuff, and it's all digital. It's just, it's insane. But obviously, having that sort of experience and holding up a bloody great iPad or whatever is going to be a pain in the ass. But clearly this is leading into something else. They don't expect anybody to be walking around doing map navigation holding a massive iPad or a phone out all the time. So run by it, swipe it, or knock it. It's clearly building up to the fact that when they release the glasses, there's not going to be some, here's the glasses developer kit, spend 6 months writing apps. They'll already have the apps, and suddenly those apps will be in the glasses, downloadable. And like you say, if they can make this work on technology that's several years old, it means they can put very, very small devices together, small kits together with batteries that can manage it. And it's going to be very impressive.
I mean, it's kind of, this is the beta for the glasses, because the apps that you're building now are completely pointless. They look great. When you see them on Twitter and you just get like the screen recording, they look great because that's all you're seeing.
Yeah, exactly.
But when you're actually holding it up and doing it, it looks a bit rubbish. You need it right by your eyes. But it's also a good way of teaching developers how to use this stuff. Even if they don't use the same apps when it comes out, the fact that people know how to build these apps is super useful, which is part of the reason why I looked into it, because I was like, I really should start learning this stuff. Kind of felt like that bit in the film Looper where the guy from the future has come back, and one of the guys says to him, I'm thinking of going to France. I want to learn French. Like, you should learn Chinese. He's like, I want to learn French. Like, no, you should learn Chinese. I'm from the future. I'm telling you, you should learn Chinese. And it's kind of like, I can almost imagine future me coming back in time going, hey, Ben, you should learn AR kit. I want to do this Siri shortcut stuff. No, trust me. You want to be learning AR kit now.
Exactly. And before 2020 or something. We'll talk about Siri shortcuts. That was the other big thing, because they obviously bought Workflow, which I've sort of played. I don't know if you played with it. I never used it. I found it to be one of the most painful user experiences in terms of trying to do stuff in it. Because it's one of these things where you're trying to basically stick all of this technology and features from something like Automator or whatever, this whole scripting capability, into a device that's designed to be intuitive, and that you end up with these apps, like you get these apps with tab groups and slide menus and tooltips and those overlay tutorials that come up at the beginning, which is always a good indicator that, okay, this is a really complicated user interface. And I just struggled with, what was the app I was using recently that was similar? There was an app by Arlo, with the camera thing I bought. And it was a similar experience where I couldn't find an option. I just couldn't find where to do this specific option. And it turned out that I had to swipe the current almost panel of the screen down. But there was nothing to indicate that it was slidable. There was just nothing. You know, there was a top menu at the left, which is one of those slide menus. You hit it and a menu came out with about three options that were useless. And I'm thinking, where the hell are these options? And it turned out I had to literally physically grab the screen and sort of slide down to move, a bit like Snapchat did that time with the camera, where you had to slide it down. And then there were these other menu options underneath. It's like, it didn't even do that thing that the camera used to do on the lock screen. You know where it used to bounce? You sort of tap the camera icon. There would be a little bounce that would show a slide happening. So it was almost like going, no, 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 this is what you need to do. There was nothing like that. And when I tried to use Workflow, I just found that very grating in terms of using it. So I never really got into it. The other reason I was never really into using something like that is I always feel, I know that Apple have bought it now, and so it's now going to be called Shortcuts and everything when you install it, and it's got the Siri stuff. And if you install the Workflow app on iOS 12, you get all the Siri shortcuts, so clearly it's integrated now. But I always felt with those apps, they remind me of the Excel macro day, where there's a sequence of events that are fired off like one of those, Rube Goldberg machines. And it feels like once you've hit that button to start the process, it's just going to go and do everything. And it's going to start like with Excel or whatever, or these Automator apps on desktops where I'm just going to hit loads of macro keys. And if you happen to have got it wrong, everything goes screwy. And that's the only thing, you know, you get these people that will say, you know, I write something in Markdown and then I press a button and it will select all and it will copy it or convert it to HTML and it will parse it and then it will drop it into Medium or whatever it is, you know, drop it into my FTP package and then upload it and all this stuff. And it's like, that sounds great. But if one of those steps goes wrong, what happens? Is there a get out? Is there a ball? Yeah. And that's the only reason. And you get lots of people that go, oh, I changed my entire workflow by doing all of these workflow things. And then they started panicking because Workflow got bought by Apple and they were like, oh my God, what are they going to do to it? It's clear that Shortcuts is actually Workflow and it's got Siri Shortcuts. And then people are like, oh my God, are they going to drop the ability to do normal workflows and all the other stuff you can do? And the API integration that you can do with remote APIs and parse JSON and all this stuff.
It's exactly the same.
Yeah, exactly. But it's that panic because obviously you've now made your entire workflow literally dependent on this app, which means if they change something, you're screwed. And that's that. I don't like that sort of thing. So I haven't really played with that.
No. I mean, it's interesting now because they have the Siri shortcut system. So there's two ways it works. One way is through NS User Activity. So if you've already got an app since iOS 8 that used NS User Activities, then they automatically appear as Siri Shortcuts, which is why all the workflows continue to work in the new Shortcuts app, because that's how they all worked. So if you've got stuff like in Things, for example, to add a to-do, I think that's probably a user activity. So like, you can tell of them. So if you ever load like an activity view controller, so if you're in Safari and you click the little share button and you have all the apps listed there that can basically take that URL and do something, that's an NS user activity basically. And so all of those things automatically work in Siri. But then you can also create custom ones. So I did this myself. I've got an app that logs my gaming time. Because I've got certain platforms I can't do automatically. So let's say that I play 2 hours of Super Mario Odyssey on the Switch. I open up my app. I say I choose Super Mario Odyssey from a list of games I have. I choose Switch as the platform. And then I type in the number of hours I spent and press OK. And then it logs it for use on my gaming website. But now with Siri Shortcuts, I was able to create a custom Siri intent that basically takes the title of the game parameter and the platform parameter, and every time I do that in the app, it saves it. So it basically says to the system, hey, Ben just saved Skyrim on Switch, or Ben just logged Magic the Gathering on PC, and it does it every single time, so that eventually Siri will start suggesting to me from the lock screen or from the Siri watch face or from anything else, hey, last time you did Super Mario Odyssey on the Switch, so you might want to log that again this morning at the same time. So you can tap that and it'll take you straight into the app at the point 2 steps in, so that I can just type the number of hours I spent and press go. So it saves you a bit of time and jumps through those hoops for
That's
you.
nice.
I mean, the example they gave was like almost like a Just Eat style food place. So I order the same meal from the Chinese nearly every week. And so with the Siri shortcuts, in future, I'd be able to just tap to say, yes, reorder my meal, because it already knows all the steps. And with those, you don't necessarily even need to open the app. It can provide custom UI in the Siri interface. And it's confusing because you hear Siri shortcuts and you assume it's Siri the voice, but it's not. It's Siri the AI. And the vocal part's only a very small piece of it, which is that you can assign a vocal command to the Siri shortcut. So let's say that I log my Super Mario Odyssey time on Switch. I could then say, yeah, let's save a quick shortcut for that. And then I could say with my voice, log Super Mario. And then the next time I say that, no matter on what device, it'll open that app on my iPhone and take me to that point. But it isn't possible for me to say, log Skyrim on Switch, because it doesn't understand that. Like, I'd have to record a custom voice message for every single game and every single platform, which isn't feasible.
Yeah.
It's literally a shortcut. It's like assigning a shortcut key to a task in the toolbar. It's weird, but it works really well.
Exactly. And what's interesting about it is it's compared to Echo is that, you know, you're not having to create some bot or app and publish it to bloody recognize it. It's all being done on device. But it is exactly that. It's a shortcut type system. And you're not, you know, if you wanted to play, if you wanted to sort of integrate with Spotify or anything like that, you know, because people were saying, oh, great, you know, it's going to open up all kinds of things like that. It's like, well, yeah, you can do that. But obviously you'll be saying, you'll be assigning a shortcut to that particular playlist or something, you know.
Yeah.
Play my tunes playlist.
Although that's not a great example, because iOS 12 also silently added a new Siri intention, which is for media players. So if Spotify want to, they can add the ability for you to say, hey, play blah, blah, blah in Spotify, and it'll do it. But I know what you mean.
There were a few weird hidden things like that stuck in.
I'm excited about the Siri shortcuts, because with these custom commands, the app can prompt you and say, hey, you should probably call it this, but it doesn't have to. But I get the feeling that they're going to be using this in order to significantly boost the recognition capture of Siri. Because at the moment, you can say a command and it can be wrong. And you can tap it and edit it, the text. And they probably use that to try and work out what you said. But most people can't be bothered to do that. But I reckon a lot of people are going to be recording custom messages with Siri for these various shortcuts. And so from that, they can get a huge amount of data and improve the recognition capability quite significantly. And it seems in the coding of this custom intention, it wouldn't be long until we can get to a point where it is more Echo-like, where you can say, hey, do X and Y in app B, and not have it be limited to certain domains like to-do lists or media handling or VoIP calling. So I think it will be better in iOS 13. But it's cool for now, and the nice thing is that you can chain them all together. So you can do things like say, hey, it's Friday night, and it'll automatically know that that is your custom command for the shortcuts you've set up, and it'll go, okay, I'll activate all your HomeKit scenes to turn the lights off.
Cool.
I can turn on the Apple TV. I can order your Chinese dinner. I can text your wife to say something. You know, you can just chain all of these things together and just do it all through Siri, which is an interesting, different philosophy to the way that Alexa works or some of the other smart assistants. So it's
but again, we're in that sort of chaining failure point. You know, it's like the lights dim. It texts your wife to say, hey, you know, come down and we can have some Chinese or whatever. It orders the Chinese, but something happened and it failed. And there was some error ordering the Chinese. The Chinese didn't get ordered. And then the music comes on or the film comes on and you're sitting there going, okay, we're the Chinese. It's the Chinese family.
Well, that's the thing. So it has confirmations at each step. So at the end, at the end, she'll then say confirmations for most of the stuff. So she'll say, that's done. Obviously, with the Chinese ordering, you have to authorize the payment. So like an Apple Pay sheet inside the Siri UI.
Okay.
So you don't even have to open the app. I mean, you can have it open an app, but obviously that has to be the last part of the workflow, because otherwise the last one will have precedence. But it has the ability to do full custom UI within Siri, including Apple Pay.
I should
So
play
it
with
will
it.
do, it will even do things in stages. So if you had that scenario, for example, it might go ding ding ding. Okay, now order in Chinese. Once you finish that and the Apple Pay is successful, it would then move on to the next set of workflows. So I think you can stage it and have like breakpoints almost. It's
Okay.
there's a lot of stuff that I need to. I've only played with it briefly on my 6S, which obviously doesn't have all of my apps installed on it. So that's one thing that I am very keen to upgrade my iPhone 10 to iOS 12 for, so that I can dive into that in a lot more detail. But it seems good. I don't know how often I will use it for multiple shortcuts at once, but there's definitely
Yeah.
times when I want to bind certain HomeKit things together. And you could do this to an extent with HomeKit, because that has the ability to do custom recordings in a way, because you can create scene names that are bizarre. So I've got one called Bloody Blackpool Illuminations, and that turns off all the lights in the house. And it recognizes it, so I can just say, "Hey, think of me about Bloody Blackpool Illuminations," and it works. I didn't need to record anything, it's just done through text. This should be a lot better and a lot more reliable.
Yeah, I need to test. I think I'm going to test a few apps out that I use sort of daily, and then if they work okay, I'm just going to install it on my 10 because, yeah, I mean, I've got it on. I've just updated the 7 to beta 3, and it is so fast. Just opening apps and switching between apps, and from the lock screen, opening the camera, you know, they made improvements around that. It's really, really nice.
The best improvement is the fact that the activity view controller doesn't take 2 seconds to load anymore. It's pretty much instant. I always hate when you tap the share button, it's like, "Are you coming today?" Oh, there you
Yeah, exactly. And the other big thing was that screen time stuff, which I'm really looking forward to playing
Oh,
around
yeah,
with.
of course, of course.
Because that's, I mean, obviously they're doing it as like a health thing personally, but also it works with the kids, works with your family.
Yeah, I mean,
So
that's useful.
that's going to be really, really nice to just sort of see what's going on, and you can block individual things and limit individual things. And that's been a long, long time coming because, the kids have got some very cheap Microsoft laptops that they had to use for school one time because their school system that they used didn't support HTML5. It was all Flash. And that had some really nice features where you could limit individual apps and you'd get a weekly report and things like that. So yeah, that's going to be really useful. So I'm looking forward to playing around with that. What else did they talk about?
Memoji.
Yes, Memoji. I mean, that was interesting because that came off the back. They did the tongue detection first, didn't they? Instead about tongue. And then all of a sudden they talked about Memoji, which took me back to the whole Wii days, Nintendo Wii, of setting up your, what was it called? The characters that you used to
They were
create.
called Mii's,
That's
MII.
it. Yeah. And their whole interface for like creating the character looks really, really cool. And I love the integration with FaceTime and everything. For the FaceTime call with the
That's
characters.
just scary.
I know. Love the idea that if a client ever said, "Can we have a FaceTime call?" I'm just like, right, I am going to do it with an emoji. I'm going to try and have this entire call, with a character on my head.
Just have a turd head.
Big bag of money or something.
Yeah.
and the 32. I mean, 32 people. I love the fact that it's like, for years people have gone. It's like everything with Apple. It's like multiple timers on Siri. They're going to do the same thing with that. They're going to do something ridiculous because it's like with FaceTime. It's like, when are they going to do group FaceTime? They've never done group FaceTime. It's always one. It's so
Not
ridiculous.
three, not four, 32.
It's like, how many should we do? How many? What's the maximum we can do at the moment? Let's just max it. So we're going to do a 32 person
Although,
FaceTime call.
apparently that 32 number isn't so crazy as we all thought. There is, what is it? Is it Google Hangouts has a limit of 32 as well?
Okay.
There is some competitor app that has
Okay.
exactly 32, and so it's more of a, we're exactly the same. The way they introduced it made it sound like, what?
Yeah,
But
I just love the
it's not as
idea that
crazy as it sounds.
I just love the idea that they could go, right, you want timers? You want multiple timers on Siri? We're going to give you timers, AR timers that you can leave around the room and stuff. Really, just something crazy, something really stupid in a sort of similar vein. But I think that was another big deal. What else was it? Oh yeah, the big thing at the end was this marzipan thing, which was quite interesting. Which I'm guessing they had to mention because as soon as the beta was released, everyone was going to pull it apart and find all the references anyway.
Oh yeah.
Because what was it? Voice memos, weather, home, and
Stocks.
stocks were all done with this UI kit, whatever it's going to be called,
Yeah.
on Mac OS, which it does look interesting. I think I'm not so much of a snob in that sense that there's a lot of people, it's gonna degrade Mac OS apps and create this sort of really crappy Mac OS apps. It's like,
See,
well,
when people
people
say that, You know, it's like, what would you prefer? Would you rather this app was on the Mac and isn't as great as you'd like, or would you rather it wasn't there at all? Would you rather just do it through a website? Because you know what I'd fucking prefer.
But this is the other thing. A lot of apps these days, you know, there are still the traditional apps that have menu bars and have all the things and look like traditional Mac apps and have the sort of toolbars, the Photoshop type stuff and things like that. But a lot of apps, I mean, look at the Skype app. You know, a lot of these apps just look like they're iOS type apps anyway. You know, most of the interface is on the screen. And if you go to the menu, I mean, what does Notes give you? I mean, Notes just gives you, if I click on the Notes app and then I go up to the menu, I've just sort of got, you know, backup info that I can pretty much do on the screen anyway. So formatting, views, and all kinds of stuff like that. So, you know, there's probably going to be that capability to have these menu options. So it looks, it, yeah, the note, it would be like the Notes app. It looks like pretty much the Notes app in iOS, but it also has a menu bar and it's rescalable. But yeah, I've got the same opinion. I mean, I would love to have the official. I mean, I use the official. I use Tweetbot at the moment, which is actually pretty nice on the Mac. But I use the Twitter app on the phone, and I would like, you know, the Twitter app on Mac OS again. And if this means that they can take the Twitter app from iOS, which I think is a nice app, and port that to Mac OS quicker and maintain it easier because it's one code base effectively, then I'm all for that. You know, I don't see the big deal of it. You know, people can, like you say, people have been complaining about Mac OS apps, the lack of Mac OS apps, the lack of the platform support, the lack of developers. If this is going to allow developers to make it easier, especially iOS developers, because there's probably a lot more than macOS developers, to take their apps and put them on macOS and get macOS going again like that, then great, I'm all for that. Especially if it gets rid of these bloody, what's it called, the hybrid apps.
Electron.
Electron, you know. So, you know, if they can take the native Slack app from iOS or the iPad and get that working on the Mac, then I'm all for that because, you know, on iOS, that loads pretty much instantly. On Mac OS, it's horrific experience. And the Trello app and other apps like that that are clearly web-based apps just in a bloody wrapper. Intercom haven't got one yet, but I created one that was like a shell thing. I mean, I'm totally for it. So it'd be interesting to see what happens. Obviously, they're talking about it being potentially a next year thing. And they're using it, which is good. So they're going to be developing stuff with it this year, which hopefully means they're going to iron out a load of issues with it. So I think it's good. I think it's totally good.
Yeah. I will definitely use it for some of my apps that I wouldn't have written for Mac previously. So it seems like a good choice to me.
Yeah, and I also think it's going to encourage people who don't develop natively with Swift at the moment. So I don't develop purely natively with Swift, but it will encourage people like me to go, okay, well, now I've got the ability to write a Mac app. You know, I can write an app. I can write that anyway. Do you know what I mean? But you know, if I'm writing it, if I've learned how to do it in iOS, so I've learned the iOS side of things with UIKit, and then I'm thinking, okay, I want to do some Mac stuff, but maybe I don't want to learn all the Mac side of things because I'm so used to being in iOS. Well, now I can just take that experience I've got and just get it working straight away on Mac OS, which I think is a good thing. So
yeah,
I like it.
I think it's a good step.
There was no air power, unfortunately, no hardware.
No, that was to be expected.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with that. I think I feel like because Air Power was this thing where they were doing the QI. Is it QI? Qi.
Qi.
Yeah,
Qi.
Qi. Variation of Qi. And I'm wondering whether there's some issue. Well, there's two things. Whether it's an issue with that because they're trying to extend the standard, and maybe that's not going how they wanted it to, and it's more complicated. And the other issue is,
I think they probably just wouldn't care about that. Apparently, the reason is that there's an overheating problem because they've got three magnets very close to each other. That's what someone allegedly on the team leaked to Bloomberg a couple of weeks ago. That's why it's delayed, but I don't know how true that is.
I would like to know how a watch with a stainless steel strap is supposed to work as well, because you can't put it on its side.
It's going to be... Yeah, I couldn't really care less about air power. I mean, bearing in mind how much they're going to charge for it, I mean, it's going to be over £100, presumably. You can buy, you know, you get Apple Watch charger for free in the box. That's fine. Or you can buy, you know, cheap one on Amazon. I've got a cheap Qi, whatever the hell it's called, charging pad. So I don't really need to have all three devices on the exact same pad. I can have two pads next to each other and that works fine. Sort of feels like if they'd launched it alongside everything else, it would have been like you'd probably just buy it because you might as well. But I can't imagine I'm going to buy it when it comes out. Because it doesn't add anything for me. I don't think it makes much of a difference.
also things like the AirPods case, that all this, whether it's going to be new AirPods with a new case or new AirPods with a new case, and also the new case separately for existing AirPods. You know, AirPods, you hardly have to charge. You know, it's like every month or something, you charge the case. So it's not like, you're, you know, every night you need to put the case back on the pad. It's just overkill. You know, you can just, you know, stick it on now and again. So I don't think you're going to have a situation where every night you've got everything on the pad anyway.
No.
But yeah, I didn't charge my watch the other day. I think we've gone camping and I forgot to put the charger back, and I was on about 60% when I went to bed, so I just left it on the side. Couldn't bother to go to the office and get the charger, and it still lasted the whole of the rest of the day, next day, till I went to bed anyway. So
the battery life's pretty good on them now, especially the the cellular models. They got a big battery boost. They work really well. And I mean, I rarely use the cellular anyway because I'm inside all the time, which helps. So I'm always on Wi-Fi, but the battery's really good now. Mine lasts easily 2 days, sometimes even two and a half, three.
Yeah, cellulars. I've rarely used the cellular explicitly, but it's always been accidental. It's been like, you know, my wife went out the other day, dropping the kids off, and left her phone, but obviously had the watch, so I was still able to message her and call her, and she could still have a conversation with the watch, which was quite cool.
Yeah, I got my wife a cellular Apple Watch, and the problem is that we didn't ever activate it because she's on three, so she can't use it. We're finally getting her off that now, so just waiting for her contract to end and then switch her over to EE so we can activate that. But she constantly leaves her phone at home and then can't message me, and she has to send me an email saying, I've left my phone at home. So I'm looking forward to getting her switched over hopefully this month, and then that won't be a problem so much. But
there was a couple of other bits on the watch, wasn't there? Walkie-talkie mode, which looked interesting. it still feels very much like message audio, because there's the sort of you have to send a request saying I want to do walkie-talkie with you, and you say yes, and then if it was a real walkie-talkie, it would be a bit intrusive. You're in the middle of a meeting and suddenly your phone starts speaking because your wife's contacting you. So it is still like I'm going to send you a message, your watch indicates somehow there's a message, you tap to listen to it, and then you can do a reply. Sounds interesting.
I don't get it myself. It's like, it's not for me. I can never see myself using it because, you know, as you say, it's intrusive. Even if I'm not in a meeting, I'm working, I'm busy, I don't want to be distracted by shit like that. I can see it being fun with like kids, like when they're running around and you can just use it occasionally to check on what they're doing.
Yeah.
Or like where I live on a new build estate, there's like come about 4 or 5 o'clock, there's kids just everywhere running around playing and that, and the parents come out and shout for them, hey, get in here, come for your dinner. And so if they had an Apple Watch, it'd be kind of nice because you could just go walkie-talkie mode, psh, get your ass in here. So I can see it'd be useful for that, but also just because you get notifications on your watch, that's the whole point of it. So, you know, a message works or a phone call works. It just seems a little bit weird.
It's definitely going to be one of those things that if I get a request from a client, it will be, I'm not going to do walkie-talkie with you.
But it's one of those things. A lot of people would look at it and just go, oh, this is stupid. They should be working on something else. I can't find myself getting worked up enough about it to be annoyed that they did that instead of some other feature. It's just not for me. I'm just like, okay. That's a feature that's there. That's useful, but I will likely never use it. I'll probably use it once to test it.
Well, I remember like the Scribble thing, whatever the hell that was called. The only time I get those is when my daughter, my youngest daughter is with my wife and has got hold of a watch, somehow got into that app, and all of a sudden I'll start getting these little squiggle messages through.
I get those all the time when my wife tries to send the heartbeat one and she can never get the two fingers on and hold them and remember to do it. So I'll get like 10 messages that are just little taps and like dots and stuff. And it's like, what the hell? Yeah. Oh, here it comes. There's the heartbeat. Oh, it's only half a second. There'll be another one in a minute. There it is. Okay. Lovely. Love you too.
Yeah, I won't be installing the watch beta yet because apparently I did it last time. I did it last time and then realised afterwards you can't downgrade it. I was like, okay, I think I'll wait.
And the problem with them as well is that if you do the watch beta, you know you're going to have to install every beta, and it means upgrading your watch every 2 weeks, and it takes nearly 2 weeks for it to install. So it's like, ugh.
I mean, the only reason I do it was for the podcast stuff, because that's quite nice that they've added this, finally added the ability to, you can leave your phone, go out for a run or a walk and listen to a podcast without having, obviously you're eating into your cellular, but and your battery and everything, but unless it's downloaded, I suppose it can download it to the watch. It's got what, 8 gig or something. So yeah, it's interesting. But that was a pretty good event. There's some good stuff. I think there was a few surprises for people that they weren't expecting, especially I don't think they were expecting people were expecting them to announce the Marzipan stuff, which was quite cool.
I didn't think they'd mention it this year.
Yeah, looking forward to what's coming. So, especially hardware wise, see what they can do now next with the iPhone 10 Series 2 or iPhone.
Well, it looks like the iPad's definitely going to get Face ID because the iOS 12 betas, the iPad IPA has got all the avatar kit stuff in it.
Oh, okay, interesting.
So it must be good. And I think there was like some in the first beta, I think some of the biometric stuff leaked that it had like an iPad icon or something. But then in the third beta that just came out yesterday, it's got the avatar kit stuff in the iPad, which is pretty conclusive that there's going to be an iPad with a camera that can do the Memojis and all that kind of stuff. So it's a safe bet it's going to have Face ID and the home button and all that stuff.
We need now some MacBook Pro refresh, and it's going to be an expensive September, October. New iPads, new Mac, new phones.
Interestingly, there's also, we didn't mention it because I think neither of us really care about it that much, but there's the dark mode for macOS.
Yes.
Great. But there wasn't a dark mode for iOS, but there is in the betas a dark mode. In fact, it's not even in the betas, I think it's in the documentation. There's an iOS dark mode flag. So you can find out whether the app is running on a system that's got a dark mode enabled. I don't think they call it that. They call it something like UI style or something, and it's either light or dark. So it seems a safe bet that that will come as either iOS 12.1 or 0.2 or 0.3, or it might be one of those things that they save for. I mean, they might do that really annoying thing like the new iPhone 10. When it comes in September, they might be like, oh, and it has a dark mode, but it's exclusive to this device.
Yeah, exactly.
That's exactly the sort of bullshit they do.
Yeah, because I thought it might be one of those things they slip into a later beta, because they've been known to do that, where they sort of suddenly add a feature into it, because they don't want to reveal.
It seems like such a big thing, though, because apps are going to have to make massive changes. Exactly, it merits an announcement.
Yeah, it would need to give them time. It would need to give developers time, unless they're so sure that it would be almost seamless, which is virtually impossible to believe, that it's going to need some tweaks or some changes. So they have.
But
to
realistically, I mean, but realistically,
how
is a dark mode going to work on the phone? Like, you say, I want it to be dark mode. Well, your apps aren't going to go dark automatically because they might not have been updated to support it. Yes, all of Apple's apps will probably go automatically, but I could choose not to bother supporting it. I think it's just going to be one of those optional things of, okay, well, the home screen is darker, other bits are darker, the settings panels are darker, iPhone apps are. But in every other app, it'll be told, there is a dark mode.
Yeah.
And so apps that, at the moment, have built their own custom versions of it, so I think there's loads that you can go in and say, yeah, I want it to be use the dark theme. I guess that will disappear and be replaced by using the system one rather than having you do it on an app per app basis. But I suppose it doesn't really require any developer time because developers don't have to do anything. If you don't want to support it, don't bother.
Well, there's three stages, I guess, isn't there? There's ignore it completely. There's detect. Maybe there's a way of detecting that the system is in dark mode, so therefore turn on my app implemented dark mode, you know, my own implemented dark mode.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Or there's the third option of the system's in dark mode. I'm going to actually, you know, I've now built my app to support light and dark mode of the system. So there's almost like, you know, ignore it, quick hack to get around it to allow it to work, or properly integrate it with the system. So, yeah.
I guess it's possible that some, not really the smart invert feature, but I guess it's possible things like UI table views that by default they have white backgrounds, and I suppose if you turn dark mode on and the developer hasn't changed anything, it could automatically switch that to the colors it thinks. So if you're using purely the default implementation, it'll just work, but I have a feeling it'll be more of a thing you have to manually opt into, just because otherwise it'd be a mess.
Isn't one of the other things about dark mode on iOS this whole thing about, oh, it's going to save battery life, but that only works if dark mode is black
and the it would have to be completely black, not dark, and only on the iPhone 10.
Yeah, exactly. So if they do end up doing a dark mode that isn't black, then yes, it might use less power, maybe, I don't know. But it's not going to have the same effect as it being black.
No,
it would still use
It'd have to be on the iPhone 10, and it'd have to be the pixels are completely black, because then the screen turns it off and it
Yeah,
just looks
exactly.
like black. I mean, that's why the Apple Watch is got a completely black UI, because it's an OLED screen that uses less power. So if you have the simple watch face, for example, with everything dialed down to the minimum, so it's just the hands, you will save more battery life than someone using the colourful utility face.
Everyone, whatever.
Because you are using less pixels whenever you look at your watch.
Yeah,
I don't know how much of a difference that would make. Probably not much, realistically. But that is why watchOS is black. So your dark mode isn't going to make any difference to your battery life. That's bollocks.
I think someone did a test where they did inversion mode or whatever it was on an iPhone 10 and managed to get 10% more battery life or something.
Well, that would make
sense.
Whatever
their unscientific test was, you know.
That would make sense, because in invert mode, white would turn to black, and a lot of apps use completely pure white, whereas a dark mode does not use pure black. It uses...
Exactly.
Like, if you look at macOS, it's not, like, solid black. Most things aren't, because it would look horrible. Yeah, it's strange. I mean, a good example is if you use the Overcast app, that has three themes. It has a light one, a dark one, and then a black one. And the black one is specifically for the iPhone 10 and is completely black. And the difference between that and dark mode looks way nicer. But I guess it looks fairly nice on the iPhone 10, just because the colour like disappears into the sides and everything. But it's very, very different. But
I still
want to
see what happens with dark mode with the privacy. You know, your issue that you raised about Safari with privacy. When you go into private mode and it goes dark, what will happen
in
the dark?
Check that in Mohave, actually. I should really install that. I might install that on my laptop to play with it. But yeah, they must be doing something there to make it stand out more.
Yeah, new private window. Oh, okay. Well, new private window at the moment doesn't come up dark. So it just comes up with a dark, you know,
just the dark status bar. It's on iOS that is the more of a problem, because in iOS, the entire Chrome is dark.
Yeah, so that would be interesting.
Yeah, that's always my argument for dark mode on iOS. I think it's stupid, but people want it. And
I know, it's the biggest thing people are going on about as well. Look, literally,
the
biggest everyone was going on about was dark mode. Like, it's, and I guess this is the problem. You know, this is what Apple have to deal with. You can do all this work and all this stuff and build all this technology and do all this, go through all this pain and torture of writing this stuff, and it's the dark mode that gets the applause. It's the dark mode that gets everyone talking about Twitter. It's
that's one reason why emojis get updated with every single version update. It's because that's the main driver for people to update. They want to update their phone so they can get the new emoji. And I guess that's not optimal. A lot of people get pissed off. Like, a lot of people hate this Memoji thing. They hate how much screen time that got, because they think it's stupid. But it's also the main thing that's making people buy the iPhone 10, probably.
Yeah.
So that's the times we live in, unfortunately.
Yes, well, yeah, it's developers.
For better or worse.
All the developers thinking these devices are all for them and not for the actual consumer, which is what it's obviously targeted at. And that's what Apple are trying to compete with the whole, you know, like with iMessage and with FaceTime and the Memoji. It's trying to be like Snapchat type thing, isn't it, to appeal to that sort of market. So
I do like the fact that the Memoji look exactly like their emoji. Like, the actual design of it is really, really clever. They'd already done that to an extent with the avatars, making them look like emoji. So the animoji look like the emoji, so like the monkey is exactly the same between the two, and the lion's the same between the two. It looks really nice and got that like cartoony shine to it. But it's awesome that they managed to do that for Memoji, because they look so much nicer than every other competitor version of the same sort of thing. So if you look at Xbox avatars or Mii's on the Nintendo, or you look at Samsung's implementation, or Facebook's one is awful, all of them don't look quite right. They're nice. I think that the Xbox and Nintendo ones are the best. Maybe the Nintendo one, just because it's so cartoony, it's more abstracted. But these ones, just from a design point of view, look really good. Every one of them just looks really custom, like you've had an artist come in and do it. And they seem very customizable, so I'm definitely excited to give that a try.
Yeah, they do look good. And apparently, I haven't obviously tried it, but apparently the customization process is really nice in terms of the options you get and the feet, you know, the way you can manipulate faces and hair and different styles of things. It's like people saying, you know, why hasn't anybody else done a sort of interface like this? It's a really nice way of doing it. So yeah, I'm interested. I think I'll probably end up installing it on the 10 today or tomorrow, and then start playing with a few things. Want to try that Measure app as well, because that looks quite cool. It's in the store. You just can't.
That is so petty. Like, that was the thing that annoyed me most about the announcements was the way that Federici demoed it. It's like, isn't this cool? It can measure, it can do this, it can do this. It's like every single person that did an AR kit tutorial or app last year, this is what they made. There's hundreds of these apps in the App Store, and here you are making it look like you've just invented it and done it for the first time and showing it off. I thought that was really bad, but it's so unnecessary. Like, it's not like this whole Sherlocking, as they call it. I get it when they do things like adding, you know, support for saving passwords in Safari or to the system rather than using one password. It's like, okay, well, that makes sense. One password still has a load of extra features and it's still useful. But I appreciate why you're taking that and using it a little bit, or adding the reader mode to Safari makes sense. But this Measure app, there's no need for it to be there. It does not need to be an app that Apple are making. And it's not even installed by default. It's going to be one you download. And it's like, you didn't need to do that. You've just basically screwed over some developers for no reason. So I thought that was a little bit bullshitty. I think it would be fine if they added that to their AR glasses as like a default app, just to show it off, maybe. But to add it to iOS 12 just felt, I thought, a bit shit. But I don't really care. No, it just seemed unnecessary.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Especially the way it was demoed. If they hadn't demoed it, if they just said it's got a Measure app and people could look at it and go, oh, okay, that's cool, that'd be one thing. But the way he was like explaining it, like, oh, isn't this cool? And no one was clapping or going, yay. They're like, yeah, we've seen this before, Craig. We've seen this before many times. Last year, in fact.
Yeah. the developer in there who's just developed his own Measure app finally got something working that he wants to publish is thinking, great, I won't be publishing that tonight.
Yeah.
You Apple. what else do you want to talk about, or should we leave stuff till next time?
It depends if you've got anything in particular you want to bring up. I'm trying to think if there's anything else from WDC I wanted to mention. It seems so long ago now. I guess it was 3 weeks ago, wasn't it? Jeez, well, longer than that, 4 or 5 weeks.
Jesus. I've got issues at the moment with Amazon nicking things. I've ordered a new pair of Power Beats because one broke and I was going to get them replaced. And I ordered it, and we'd gone camping. It came on Thursday morning, left it in the hallway. Went to open it on Monday, and as I went to open the package, it was like this, and there was nothing in it, from sort of the packing paper. And then I looked at the bottom, and it had brown tape. So, and I take it. So I've raised that with Amazon, and they're doing some investigation. It's like, I mean, you know, you've got to be an idiot. This thing is traceable from the warehouse to my door. You know, it's going to be fairly easy to find out. It's like that Amazon driver story about the guy who nicked the dog. Did you hear about that?
No.
Some guy had this little schnauzer or something, this cute little dog.
I did see it. Yes. Yeah, I did. Sorry.
They got an Amazon delivery. This is the irony. They got an Amazon delivery of dog food. So, and then when they got home, the dog food's there and the dog's gone. So they're like, what's going on? So, you know, they just sort of thought, okay, this is a bit weird. We get the dog food delivery, then the dog goes, and the dog's in the back garden, and the dog food's been left in the back garden. You know, it doesn't take a genius to think there's something going on there. And they finally managed to get through to someone at Amazon who traced the driver, went to his house, and the dog was at the house. It's like, holy shit, how did you even think you're going to get away with this? So that sort of stuff drives me crazy.
That's why I got the Ring cameras.
Exactly. I mean, I replaced my, I don't know if we talked about it last time, but I replaced my office one and my back gate one with the floodlight. So,
we did. Yeah.
Yeah. So that now I've got two spares.
We talked at length about the installation, which is a pain in the ass.
Oh, yeah. Yes. So yeah, I mean, Ring is just amazing. You know, we're in the middle of camping and the thing goes and I can tell them to leave around the back. The only weird thing, and this is me being suspicious, but, well, not suspicious, paranoid, but I just think it's a fluke, is that with this delivery that was dodgy, I wanted to get some sort of proof that the box, I wanted to get like a photo from the delivery to show that the box had the brown tape. So I was checking the Ring logs, and obviously with Amazon, you can see when something was delivered. And I've got the Ring entry that says when the doorbell was rung. And the weird thing is that the entire thing is blank. There is no sound. There is no video. There's just 30 seconds of black screen.
Huh.
And it's from that delivery. So
that's unhelpful when that happens.
Yeah. So the suspicious suspicion in me goes, okay, they've got some sort of jammer, which just makes no sense because they'd have to be jamming it. So yeah, it's just a fluke, but it's so frustrating because that would have been a perfect use case for saying, you know, I've got a high definition image of this guy at the door holding the box, and you can see the brown tape on the bottom, so there's proof that when it came to the door, and it would have been perfect, but I haven't got it, so it's really annoying. But yeah,
I used my camera for the first time properly yesterday because while I get the notifications and stuff, I never answer the door through it because usually they leave it around the back anyway, and most of the time I miss when I get the notification if I'm out because I'm driving or busy or something. But yesterday we were out and about at lunch and the doorbell went, and we'd ordered a big hammock for the garden, and my wife really wanted it for yesterday, and so she answered it. And she went, she's like, hey, can you leave it in the back? And he's like, no, I can't do that. It's like, oh, can you leave it with a neighbour? He's like, no, I need your signature. It's like, oh, okay. And before she hung it up, she just went, helpful. I was like, oh, shit, press the hang up button. She hung it up, and then there was notification in the garden. I was like, oh, God, what's happening now? And the guy was chucking it into the garden. He put the hammock in the garden, and it's just put through the... But then did the speaker in the back garden through the floodlight saying, thank you. And he's like, what? I think he thought she said fuck you to him.
I love all that. Just them being bloody man. But speaking of cameras, the other interesting thing was when we went camping, I wanted to get a new router to take camping because I was using this like Linksys 4G thing, but it's quite big. Well, not big, but you know, it's one of these things with the two aerials on and everything. excuse me. And Netgear have got one called the Blackhawk 4G. It looks a bit like the footprint of a Apple TV, but it's sort of an inch high. And it's got a screen on it, a round screen, that you can see your usage and how much you've got left and status and everything, which is quite cool. But it also doubles as an Arlo camera router. And Arlo is this Netgear camera system that's wireless. So it's a bit like the sort of the ring without the solar or anything. You know, it's basically you charge it up and it's supposed to last months. But they can be put anywhere. They're magnetized and they're quite small and quite cute. So because it acts as a router for that, I thought it'd be quite cool to take camping. So that's what I ended up doing. And it was really useful because you could set the router up, plug it in, it's USB-C, but it's got 24-hour battery. So you know, you can literally sit there anyway for 24 hours and still do all the 4G. And it's got supports all the Wi-Fi standards and everything. It's got a little app to configure it and things like that. And then once you've, I had a painful process of pairing it, which was due to just it not working, but also the damn app, like I said, with the stupid menu system. Eventually got it all working. And what it meant was I could use this magnet on the back of this camera to just sort of attach it to our camper or attach it under a table leg and point it at the campsite. And to be honest, never needed to do this before. You know, usually campsites are fairly respectful in terms of people's space and you don't really get any issues. But I had taken some tech with me that I was a little bit concerned about. So I just sort of set it up. And you can set up audio and motion sensing, and it can record to the cloud, and it uploads it via the router, of course. And it's just quite a nice little package to take with you. You know, if you're going on holiday, if you need a baby monitor, you can set it up really quickly in a room in a hotel or whatever as a baby monitor with all the motion and audio, and you get alerts for the phone. And it was really cool. It wasn't cheap. You know, the router was a couple of £100, and the camera's about £250. So probably the whole setup's almost like £500-600. But traveling, you know, we're going on holiday in August. And obviously we've got a young baby, and it's just quite nice to have that, you know, not having to plug in. You don't have to configure it to a new Wi-Fi network because it works through the whatever system they're talking to with the router and the Arlo. So you literally just turn the Arlo on, turn the camera on, it's paired, it's ready to go. And you've got a 4G router while you travel as well. So, yeah, I was quite impressed by that.
Nice. I've not seen anything like that before. That's interesting. I'm just looking at it online at the moment. Looks good.
Yeah, it's neat. I don't know how many you can chain together, but if you get the normal Arlo kit, there's like a big box. But the nice thing with this Netgear as well is you can actually plug the Netgear. I'm going to try it, but I mean, haven't had so much.
Well, your audio's gone. That's ironic when talking about routers. There you are.
Background noise. Anyway, yeah, you can plug the router into your normal network and then offload the data to your network so it's not using the 4G. So you can still use the Arlo capability, which is quite nice.
Okay.
And what I want to test is if I do that and plug it into, say, the Office Eero that I've got, will, you know, if the Office goes down, if the broadband goes down, will the 4G kick in and can I then use that as a backup router, which would be quite cool. So, yeah. It was a pretty good setup. Quite pleased with it.
Nice. Yeah, I probably won't get something like that. I'm trying not to get too many things from different providers because I've obviously got all the Ring camera set up, and it's like I used to have a Canary, but I don't use that anymore because I don't want to have two apps, one for one part of the house and one for the other. So but I can see where that'd be useful if you're like traveling a lot. It'd be nice to.
Yeah, pretty cool. Right, anything else?
No, I don't think so. The last thing I was going to mention was I took your advice and bought the Car Genie for my Land Rover. Got that set up. It works really nicely, and I was really pleased with it. And then I was really annoyed with myself because to get it, I obviously had to take out AA travel, AA breakdown cover, pay for the thing, get it all set up. And then I downloaded the Land Rover app from the App Store, and it turns out that the Land Rover already has a GPS chip in it and a SIM card, and I got free breakdown cover from Land Rover and my insurance company. So I now have three pieces of breakdown cover, and I have two devices that are sending back all of my data to my phone. Because with the Land Rover app, I can unlock the car remotely. I can see its fuel level. I can see quite a lot of information and stuff about it. And it shows me. It does basically exactly the same thing as the AA one does. Apart from it seems to have some sort of smoothing in terms of the route planning. So rather than having like dots every so often, it actually has a smooth continuous line. And I guess that's because the GPS is always active because it's not going to drain the battery or anything. Because it probably does it based on the navigation system, because it always knows where I am. So it's a much smoother line rather than independently.
They're not charging a subscription or anything. It's just built in and that's it.
Just built in.
Wow. That's really cool.
Oh, well, so if I can should be the price of the car.
True.
I'd feel bad if they were charging me 30 quid a year for it.
They also use it for diagnostics, though. I wonder if they can get information back from the cars and then analyse that their end and then almost contact you to say, you know, there's an issue with your car. You need to come in for a service or something.
Potentially.
That'd be quite cool.
See, it's weird. I could pay extra, which was a subscription service that I didn't, to get like the Security Pro system, where it's then connected up to like the crime database and they can track it and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, okay.
I don't have that, but if the car gets stolen, I can see exactly where it is. But the thing I kind of like about having both systems is that if someone disables the GPS tracker, that's fairly obvious because it's actually like in the at the top of the windscreen, because it's like right up at the top of the windscreen so that it's got the clearest view to the sky, presumably. It's not going to get any interference. Yeah, it's not going to get any interference there. So my feeling is that if someone sees that, they'll disable that and then drive off with the car. They probably won't check in the quite hard to access maintenance port to find the other one.
That's true.
So it's nice having both, but yeah, it's good. I do like the app. I've been using it on some long journeys and stuff, and then absolutely crying when I see the amount of petrol I'm using. It's not fuel efficient, but it is.
What is it useful? Then, is it?
No, I went for the petrol model because it was one second faster to 60. Wow. So if you imagine a massive, heavy 4x4 vehicle, and it does 0-60 in 7 seconds,
That's quite fast.
It doesn't do that cheaply.
What is the economy? Does it tell you what the fuel economy is?
Oh, it's like 24 miles per gallon.
Still bad considering.
Yeah. No, it's all right. It's and that's it with me driving normally. Like if I do some really hard acceleration, then it'll go down dramatically.
And have you tried the 4x4 stuff or anything, or is it just driving normally? Or
no, not yet. Yeah, I did get given. So they gave me a free day out to go to one of their off-road centres where you then get to drive in a car that's the same as yours, and they'll teach you how to do all of the off-roading stuff, like you go through obstacle courses and stuff like that. I've not been to it yet, but I'm planning on doing that. But really, I'll just use the 4x4 mode when the snow comes, because that's when I need it. That's the main reason I got it, because I couldn't actually leave my house last year when the thick snow came, because tiny little 1.2 litre Fiat with tiny wheels is just like, no. This isn't coming out of a non-gritted road on a hill.
Yeah.
This is going to end badly. I've done this before.
Yeah, I had that years ago when I had a Z4 rear-wheel drive, and it was when the big snow happened that hit Basingstoke years ago, about 5 to 6 years ago, or maybe not even 8 years ago. And I was trying to come out of the junction. I had that traction control turned on. I had to turn it off to actually get it to work. But it was just insane. So I think at one point I was wheel spinning and doing 40 miles an hour, but stationary. and just trying to burn through the snow, and someone ended up giving me a little push, and I finally got a grip and managed to get out. But yeah, it was.
I wrote off a car in the snow once, so I'm very cautious of it now. It was just a little tiny Peugeot 206, and I was in a new build estate coming back to home. Literally, I'd driven back maybe like 20 miles in the snow. It's fine. Turned into that road where it wasn't gritted, and they have like these little traffic calming cobbles. And I didn't see them because they were covered by the snow, but there wasn't much. And I only went over it about probably 15, 20 miles an hour, but it lost grip and then it just slid across the road, hit the curb. Didn't look that damaged. It just stopped into a drift and it was like, nope, I ain't getting out of here again. And the wheel looked a bit like it snapped in a little bit. And I was like, I'm going to leave this here. When the snow's gone, I'll get a recovery vehicle, fix the wheel, job done. And they came to pick it up and they looked underneath and they were like, yeah, that suspension bit or the wishbone, or I don't know what it was called, but it was completely snapped. He was like, the cost to replace this is more than what the car is worth. There's just no point at this point. It's like, okay, just go and scrap it then. So now I tend to be much more cautious. And when the snow came, I was like, I'm not going to chance taking the car up through here. And my wife drives a mini convertible, so it's like that's even less useful for getting through the snow. But now I'm going to be plowing through it.
Yeah, you'll be one of those people that they take out the 4x4 on the day just to show that they can actually do it, while everyone else has abandoned their cars. I'm just popping to the shops.
When I lived on the Isle of Man, I had a friend who had a Land Rover Defender, and there was a big steep hill, and he used to sit at the bottom of it, and he'd say to people as they came up to it, he'd be like, "Don't try and get up there. A lot of people have crashed." And they'd go, "No, I can do it. I can do it." He's like, "Well, if you don't, I'll recover you for a tenner." And they're like, yeah, whatever. And they'd drive up and they'd always crash, always slide off, not be able to get up. And then he'd just rope them up, drag them to the top for a tenner. He used to make a fortune.
Yeah, good opportunity, isn't it? Yeah, like it.
Not bad for like a 17-year-old or whatever it was.
I just love the fact that he's sitting there like, yeah, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. You're not
going to. That is the best bit about that is the fact that he would tell them. It wasn't like it was a scam. Like I told it to my wife a while ago. It's like, oh, that's not very nice, is it? I was like, no, he did tell them beforehand and they agreed.
Yeah.
In about they thought they could still do it.
They're going to hire me. Yeah, exactly.
It's like,
I don't need you.
And what's the choice? Do you pay him a tenner to drag you to the top or call out the one guy that does the road recovery? It ends with M, but there's like one guy on the Isle of Man who's got a road truck that does road recovery. It's like, on his busiest day of the year, do you really want to pay him 90 quid and wait here for 4 hours for him to come and get you, or do you want to pay me a tenner for me and my bit of rope?
Like it.
Could have charged more anyway. Cool. Yeah, so we will catch up next time and chat about other stuff, maybe some freelancy stuff, I guess. Now that all the Apple WWDC stuff's out of the way, although I imagine we'll spend half the time talking about how the iOS 12 has bricked our iPhone 10.
Yeah, probably, and all the apps that don't work, and how pissed off we are, and how stupid we are, yeah. Cool.